Welcome to the Trino Community Broadcast.
Welcome back to the Trino Community Broadcast, to our usually small number of live viewers and our much larger number of on-demand YouTube video watchers. It's good to have you back once more.
Yeah, it's great to be here again. As usual, we have an exciting topic, I think. This is going to be, I think, even more exciting than some of the ones we had in the past because it's something new or, well, new and very popular, right? Like JavaScript code. You know all about that.
Of course. And it's a really easy, accessible way to get into data, I think, particularly if you are a front-end developer who sees Java and gets scared and sees JavaScript and is like, I know what that is. It's a mess. And I like my mess. My mess is comfortable and cozy and not very type safe. Even though we use TypeScript, it just doesn't quite cover everything all the time.
So you are one of those people that like is a pro TypeScript developer, like not the real JavaScript ones, or like types.
Well, so actually I'm more familiar with within Facebook, they use a like competitor to TypeScript called Flow that I've used a lot, which is functionally similar. It is more JavaScript-y, but you do type checking and everything like that. But in any case, we're going to be talking about the Trino JavaScript client and using that to access Trino and run some queries and get insights built onto a web page, which is easiest to do with JavaScript, as you can then hook into React component libraries, build up a website. You don't even need to use like GitHub pages like we've seen from Jan in the past. This is truly building a Trino-powered website. That's what we're going to be talking about today, which is super cool and fascinating, I think.
Yeah, it's also cool to talk to Emily, right? Like, she's a developer relations intern at Starburst. It's great to see how she's, like, you know, getting to grasp with things like Trino, running it locally and taking advantage of not having to run it locally and just, like, diving into the JavaScript stack around connecting to Trino. But all about that more a little bit later, because first we need to do what, Cole?
We need to talk about what's been going on in Trino in the last couple weeks.
Yes, we did manage to get some stuff done again, didn't we?
Yeah, so let's pull your screen back up. We had Trino 4.5.2, where we added an Exasol connector. Manfred, what is Exasol? I actually didn't look much into that and couldn't tell you what it is.
Exasol is a it's an MPP database, so massively parallel processing database, but it's in memory across multiple machines, super high performance. So like long-standing record holder on some of the TPCH, I want to say, or maybe TPCDS benchmarks and stuff. Very fast database, and you can finally now query it all in Trino, which is obviously great for use cases like migrating from that into the lake or combining queries that run there and access some data on a lake via like our typical object storage connectors. And the team at Exasol has been very good working with us, very patient. And we finally got this merge and we'll have them as guests in one of the upcoming Trino episodes, community broadcast episodes. And we'll learn lots more about that then.
Looking forward to it, as I have a lot to learn. On top of that, we added support for Euclidean distance, dot product, and cosine distance functions. For those of you who want to do geometry with Trino, that is now even more possible. I've gone on my little spiel before about how these functions are more useful than you think. It's like you don't think about them until one day you're trying to do some geometry and you're really, really happy that the cosine distance function exists, because otherwise implementing yourself means going and looking at some Stanford white papers, which not a good time. support for the BigQuery storage read API when using the query table function. So if you're doing query pass-through with BigQuery, you now can do even more with that. We also added that same table function for pass-through to the ClickHouse connector. So you could pass through to ClickHouse natively. And there were a lot of improvements to Delta Lake, Hive, Hootie, and Iceberg connectors, and then the native file system that's been implemented in Trino. So those should be going faster, more reliably, and with fewer errors moving forward. 4.5.3, we improved performance for non-equality joins. So when you're joining on things other than checking if two things are equal to each other, those will go faster. Support for setting the SQL path for the JDBC driver and the CLI. SQL Path, that's the thing I did as an intern. So it's fun to see that still popping up from time to time.
Well, it's more relevant now because with the SQL routines, you set up SQL Path to point to that catalog and schema where you store them, and then you don't need to worry about it where it is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the list of places where you want to look for your functions. So
yeah,
nice. That's super handy to be able to set so that you can bring your SQL routines with you wherever you go and whatever catalog and schema you're querying. Added a new execute procedure to run arbitrary statements in the underlying data source.
I have to explain that a little bit. So people are like, well, how is that different from the query table function? It's different because the query, or also some connectors called raw query table function, is, as it says in the name, a table function, which means it needs to return a table or a result set, which also means you can't run queries that don't do that, which is a purposeful limitation, let's just call it.
Yeah, we didn't want you to be able to run like query drop table star and delete your database.
Yeah, and now with the execute procedure, you can. No, obviously, like this just passes it through, and then the limitations in terms of what's possible lies with the underlying data source. So, and obviously also the security controls of that underlying system, which, I mean, typically you connect to like a PostgreSQL database for analytics with a read-only user. So then, well, no problem, right? But if you happen to not do that, or you happen to have a catalog that can do more because only certain users have access to it and can do more and access more functionality, then you can do maintenance that way now and run any queries, really.
My advice is to be careful with this. It is as dangerous as it is powerful. So don't go too crazy, or go too crazy. You know, like this is giving you all the power as a user to do what you need and want. So
yeah,
if you need to go crazy, go crazy. We had support for reading PG vector types in PostgreSQL. I briefly looked into that to try to understand what was going on, and I think the prevalence of vector types is rising as vector databases become more common was kind of my understanding there. So
yeah, it's all about the whole like embeddings and AI blah blah blah,
that yeah kind of so stuff. You know, if you want to do AI with Postgres, that's a use case that Trino is going to support now, so congratulations. Support for views when using the Iceberg JDBC catalog. So we've had Iceberg views for a while, but now we've got that for JDBC catalog as well. And Manfred, I like that, as usual, numerous performance improvements, bug fixes, and other features.
Every release,
it's good to call out. There's a lot of work being done. A lot of it's kind of on the smaller side, but these small changes cumulatively pile up into something greater over time. So
yeah, there's always things like, you know, equality delete, and now we had a like non-equality delete performance improvements where it's like, it might not affect many users, but the ones it does affect makes a big difference if you wait half an hour or 2 minutes for a query to return. So it's great to see that. And as usual, these links here on the show notes are the actual release notes, and they are always longer and full of details. So you can see here, there's more stuff going on.
So many fixes in that.
And we like that.
Yeah. Other noteworthy topics. Manfred, you could probably talk about Trino Gateway 10.
Yes, Trino Gateway 10. Wow, has this ever been a long journey? I'm so proud of the team. Star and Vishal and Will and all the other helpers on the team. Yeho as well. And the people that hang out with us on the DevSyncs. We pulled off a massive migration to now sit on top of Airlift, which is the same kind of like web application framework that is used in Trino itself, moved away from what an older other system called Drop Wizard, which makes everything a bit easier in terms of like configurations being similar. We, for example, just had a small PR that added open metrics, which will come in Trino Gateway 11. So there's lots going on, and yeah, the UI is forging ahead and more happening there. So it's super exciting. We got that release out and we're working towards 11 coming up. I don't know.
And of course, 2 or 3 weeks. Trino contributor calls are happening with some regularity. So tune into those if you ever pay attention and notice that they're happening. Otherwise, you can always go check the recap to see what was talked about, what's going on with Trino developers and contributors, and what they're thinking about and trying to solve.
Yeah, there's lots of exciting things happening all the time. Like I'm especially excited on working on the new Trino UI. So there's some movement going on there. And then what everyone should know and keep in mind is that the file system support in Trino is soon going to flip its defaults. So for those of you not aware, if you look at the Trino documentation, you have object storage here, and we have these different configurations where the new natively implemented file systems, which are more performant and more stable and better in terms of to work with, are currently still set to false. We will switch those to true and switch the old Hadoop-based one to false. And that will be a breaking change, but it's going to break things to the better because it's going to make everything faster once you migrate. So that's coming up soon. So please do test that already. You can already test it and have been able to for quite a while. All you have to do is switch those to true in your catalog and adapt the settings to whatever is configured and documented in those relevant sections here. So please do that. Let us know and stay tuned for a big fat breaking entry in the release for that release.
And it's worth mentioning as well that this allows development to be even smarter in the future, as having this native file system means that we own it and can improve it ourselves rather than relying on this dependency that is old and less easy to maintain and update. So
yeah, it also, like, the Hadoop side of things basically has all the HDFS assumption baked into it, which doesn't really work so well with the more modern cloud-based things. And so there's a whole bunch of, like, workarounds and hacks and stuff everywhere, and we were able to basically clean all that stuff away, and it's good.
Well, in any case, I think that brings us to the actual point of today's episode.
Yes. Let's. There.
I was expecting that transition.
Welcome, Emily, to the Trino Community Broadcast. Give the viewers a brief intro about yourself. What are you doing here?
Yeah, for sure. So, hi, everyone. I don't know how many people are tuning in live, but my name is Emily. I'm currently a developer relations engineer intern with Starburst, so working with Cole and Manfred and the rest of the DevRel team at Starburst. And I recently graduated from UC Berkeley about 2-3 months ago now. I studied data science and cognitive science in college, so pretty interdisciplinary background. I have a pretty developer-heavy background, but I'm also pretty interested in kind of the whole data side of things, just how to really take advantage of, like, your data and just, like, how important data is, like, in tech now. So, that's kind of my background. Am I missing anything? I think that's it.
No, I think it's very interesting. Like, the background is very cool in the sense that this whole, like, you know, big data is important, and also how nowadays the whole AI movement is all, like, modeled on how the human brain works to some degree, or brains work. And now you have a background in both. I think that's it's super interesting. Must be fascinating to watch what's going on in the tech scene these days.
Yeah.
So we're here to talk about what you've been doing in Trino rather than anything else. So Emily, of course, has been an intern for a little while now, and you've had a pretty cool project, which we hinted at when we did the intro, of using the Trino JavaScript client to kind of build a Trino-powered web page. Do we want to maybe talk about the motivation for this and why we wanted to do this, and then start diving into how you made it happen?
Yeah, for sure. So kind of when we were ideating this project, we were thinking about ways that we could kind of hit other use cases that Starburst didn't really have. So we know that a lot of data engineers use Starburst and use Trino to kind of maintain their data itself, but there isn't a lot of use case where we're actually using Trino as a backend engine to actually power a data application using modern frameworks like React or TypeScript, like you said. And so this project was kind of born out of those considerations. And interestingly enough, when I was doing my preliminary research, I realized that the Starburst Galaxy RESTful API does not include a endpoint for query processing. So we do have to use kind of specific Trino clients and Trino connectors, like this Trino.js client, to be able to be used within a kind of modern React framework anyway. So yeah, that's kind of all that we were considering. And we thought it would be cool to build a data application or a web application that is powered by Trino to kind of just have a really cool use case for people that are thinking of wanting to integrate Trino within like JavaScript or TypeScript in general. So.
Yeah. So how did that go? Like when you started, you obviously didn't know too much about Trino. I'm guessing you didn't use Trino at university or something. So no. how did that journey go from like, you know, starting yeah. and going, throwing in a deep end, so to speak?
It was a lot of trial and error. I mean, we both were on calls for like hours just trying to debug and trying to figure out how to even start up Trino on my local server, because I wasn't really familiar with the setup like that, but also even trying to connect Trino within my app itself, trying to manually figure out the configurations, figure out like the parameters that I need to actually start a successful Trino connection. Yeah, so it was just a lot of trial and error and a lot of debugging on our end.
That's exciting. So how are you liking Trino now?
I mean, it's super easy. It's super convenient. It's fast. It's very intuitive once you kind of get the client running, especially in the Node server that I have set up to handle kind of all of these queries that I'm kind of starting. So yeah, that's kind of further for later when I show you guys the code. But yeah, it's pretty easy and pretty intuitive on my end.
Do you have like a pile of Commander Bun Bun like plushies somewhere off camera right now, because your Trino is number one super fan at this point?
I don't.
Yeah, not a serious question. That's me. Right. Maybe Brian Olson.
So you've done JavaScript application development in the past at university, I'm assuming, right? Like, so that's sort of a little bit more related, more closer to your background, right?
Yeah, so I did a lot of full stack related projects in college. I was a part of this club where we would build like full stack applications for nonprofits. Shout out Blueprint at Berkeley. But that's kind of where I learned a lot of about the modern frameworks like React, React Native, JavaScript, TypeScript, and all of its kind of messy glory, like you mentioned, Cole. But yeah, that's kind of my background in that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I'm guessing that's fairly common now these days, right? Like, that's where all the cool stuff is happening, so they say, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the default frameworks and languages that someone would learn if they are familiar or they want to kind of go into kind of the web development, mobile, or not sure about mobile, but web development.
React Native's good for mobile.
Yeah.
Cool. So your application is kind of like using, you mentioned this before, the Trino JavaScript client. So just want to like recap a little bit for everyone so we're on the same page. So Trino is a server/a cluster that connects to data sources. And when you want to run a query, you talk to it via the Trino client REST API, which is not really a REST API. It is a REST API, but it's not a simple REST API. It's not a like hit me and get the results. It's hit me, get some first results, and I'll tell you more. Hit me again. Like, so it's like a conversational kind of thing. So that's difficult to understand for a lot of developers then that first hit the REST API. And so as a sort of like convenience to the community, we suggest to not implement your own client to it, but instead we provide clients, right? Like the most common one used is probably the JDBC driver that ships with every Trino release. The Trino CLI is a command line tool that kind of has its own client built into it as well. And then there's more, right? Like there's the Python client we talked about in past. And now the latest and greatest addition to that glorious thing is the Trino JavaScript client or JS client that Felipe Regalas has kindly agreed to donate to the Trino Software Foundation. So this is now a top level project in the Trino DB org. And we are in the process of making this like a fully tested and like expansively used client for JavaScript developers like Emily. And like, that's also the one you used, right, Emily?
Yes.
And you still found it on Felipe's repository.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore. But when you get the binaries, you're still getting them via NPM. So maybe you want to tell us more on what you then decided in your application, how to proceed.
Yeah, I can kind of talk a little bit about like the tech stack and kind of how I organized everything. So again, this is kind of a data application slash web application where I am deriving insights from open source data sets that I found on Kaggle, where I am kind of deriving rideshare analytics insights from New York City. So Uber rides, Lyft rides, kind of how things such as the borough location affects these data points, or how the weather affects like how many ride requests there are in like a given like year, things like that. And yeah, I'm using the Trino JavaScript client to connect to my data sets that live on my Galaxy server. Please correct me if my kind of language is incorrect, but that's kind of what I'm doing. And I'm just using this Trino client that lives in my Node.js server to access these queries, to handle these queries, to kind of maintain the API that I have with my front end, as well as just to handle all that server-side logic. So that all kind of exists in my Node server. So the front end, I've decided to use React and TypeScript with Material UI components as well. I know everybody kind of has their own opinion about component libraries, but I chose to use Material UI. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm rendering all of these dynamic graphs. That's kind of reading in this data that's getting passed in from Trino. And yeah, I can show you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds all very complicated and complex. Maybe you're going to give us a bit of a tour.
Yeah, of course.
I can play the little segue we've got.
Can you guys see my screen okay?
We can now, yes.
Awesome. Yeah, so this is kind of the bare bones application that I've created. There's still a lot of like styling that I need to do and kind of some like last minute changes I need to make, but this is kind of what it looks like so far. And so as you can see, I have a bunch of graphs. These graphs are all reading in data that I have gathered from my Node server that Trino is kind of querying. And so as you can see, like for this chart, it's like a really cool bubble chart where it gives us the ride requests in New York boroughs per hour. So in Manhattan, let's say like 11 a.m. So this data is scaled down by 1,000. So this is kind of the value that Trino would spit out as to how many ride requests there are in Manhattan at 11 a.m. So yeah, I have some really cool like data points here. So this graph is average ride requests based on weather composite index. So after gathering like weather data in New York and joining that with the rideshare data for New York, I normalized the data using kind of this min-max normalization and received a weather composite index, which then kind of returns the number of ride requests for that given index. So
So layman's terms, I need to understand what a weather composite index is. Sorry, I'm getting a little carried away. Like sunny means good, or like what's like a high value of the weather composite index is like, what does it mean? Like a nice weather or?
Yeah. So the composite weather index is kind of calculated as the average of the normalized values. So the values, the weather parameters that I'm passing it are like average minimum temperature in Fahrenheit, average maximum temperature in Fahrenheit, the average precipitation and the average snow. So after kind of normalizing this data using min-max, transforming the data from a value of 0 to 1. From there, we kind of calculate the average of all these values and kind of spit out a number of ride requests for that given index. I'm not sure if that makes sense. It's pretty data science heavy, but yeah.
So it's like on the far left of this graph is when it's like really cold, or
yes,
and on the far right is when it's really hot.
Yes, okay. Or like hot.
And then there's like precipitation in the middle that is influencing it in some way. Okay.
Yes. So yeah, that's just kind of, I just wanted to talk a little bit about that graph. But yeah, there's also like ride requests based on like trip distance. So if a person were to request 3 to 5 miles, there's like this many ride requests for that given year. If a person requested a ride within 1 to 3 miles, there's this amount of ride requests in that given year. And I can also segment by Uber if you want to see only Uber data, or like Lyft. So there's some cool dynamic rendering going on there. And in terms of these cards, I thought it'd be pretty cool just to give like a summary, but kind of for users that want to say, oh, I just want to see like how much I'm going to get paid on Monday. Like, and this is kind of the average of all ride requests in 2022 on Monday. And yeah, so it's pretty cool data. Yeah, these are kind of the data points that I thought were really cool and wanted to share. But honestly, the opportunities are pretty endless and kind of what, how you want to transform your data, what analytics you want to kind of gain from it. But yeah, that's kind of my project so far.
So you can filter by day of week, you can filter by business, you can filter by borough. Yes. When you're doing that, is it running a new query or is it using data that's already been loaded in and simply going to a subset of that on the front end?
Yes. So I'm only loading in the data once. I was just thinking in terms of like not wanting to overload Galaxy with crazy like query payments. So I was just thinking that I would load in the data once, save it into a use state, and when I'm kind of choosing different options in the drop down, have a use effect that detects that change and just grabs the specific data that I need from the data already loaded in and kind of output that instead. So that's kind of my logic around that.
That's very interesting to see. Like, it's one of those funny things on these client tools. Some of them are like, for every little thing, they fire a new query at Trino, and others are like, oh, yes, give me all the data. Like when, like last time we talked to Patrick about Power BI, there's literally this import mode where you like, it literally sucks everything in and then everything happens on the Power BI setup. So in this case, you are pulling the data into your node server, I'm guessing, or is that on your client?
It is on the node server, but the client also lives on the node server.
Yeah, because you're running it locally. But if it would be like a hosted web app and like Cole would access it, then most of the data would sit in the node server on your server and Cole would just see the client-side rendered output and that would change.
Yes. Yeah, cool. I can also show you the code as well if you guys wanted me to pull that up.
Yeah, I was just going to say this all looks very pretty, but like, let's get down to dirty details.
Yeah. Let me share my entire screen so I can
also for those of you that want to follow along at some stage in the future, Emily has graciously agreed to put this on a Git repository, and so you will be able to follow this and like look at it in more detail yourself. Maybe start with a high level of what you got going now, right? Like, you have, where's the data now sitting?
Yes.
So what data is it? You mentioned Kaggle or something.
Yes, the data sets I pulled are from open source in Kaggle. So that data actually lives in Starburst Galaxy. So we had to kind of manually upload that into our storage layer. So me, with the help of Monica, who is kind of my mentor at Starburst almost, she kind of is the one that manually uploaded all of the data from Kaggle that we downloaded into Starburst Galaxy, which kind of is almost where the data is maintained. So we did things such as like schema discovery to check kind of the data cleanliness. We did data transformations in Galaxy to create like the bronze and the silver level tables to, again, just kind of clean up the data and transform it in the way that would be useful to our queries. And so that was kind of the process there. And
so that's all here, in Starburst Galaxy and some sort of like, I guess, iceberg tables or something like that on S3.
Yes.
Or so.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So that all lives in Galaxy. Yeah. And so the data for my weather data, as well as my rideshare data, lives in AWS, and the taxi lookup, so the location of the boroughs data, lives in Snowflake.
Okay. But like, ultimately, this is all like, anyone can do that with Trino as well, right? Like, if you run Trino on your own cloud and you create your iceberg catalogs and like import them and stuff. That's cool. So how big is that data set?
So the rideshare analysis data set, I think the raw file is like 11 gigabytes. So it's very, very, very extensive because it's all the rideshare analytics. So every single ride that was kind of jotted down from 2019 to 2023. But to kind of lower like the amount of data that I'm using, I segmented the data by years and I'm only using rideshare data from 2022.
So it's truly big data, I guess.
Yeah, it really is.
That's cool. So now you had the data, like with Monica's help, you got the data into Starburst Galaxy, and you can like even like I guess browse around in the UI there and like look at the schemas and tables and stuff. But now you want to have this outside in an application, and that's exactly where your project comes in. So tell us more what you put together there. I see a package JSON file and a node server modules.
Yeah, so my data lives in this folder called Demo Galaxy App, which I should probably change to Demo Trino App soon. But I have kind of two main folders. So I have a Demo React frontend as well as my node server. So in the Demo React frontend, that's kind of where all the React components live. And that's kind of basically the frontend portion of this project. And my node server is kind of, again, where the Trino client lives, where the query processing lives, and overall just the server side logic. And my Trino kind of instance lives in this Trino client server, which is this page right here. And I can kind of, do you want me to kind of go do like a brief overview of?
Yeah, like I think it would be great to have a bit of a walkthrough in the sense of like, so there's this Trino.js client project from Philippe / now from the TrinoDB org. How did you make that be part of your code base for starters?
Yeah, exactly. So first, obviously, I imported the client. I installed it within my own project. And this is kind of the way that I instantiated this Trino client based on my parameters, so using my server, as you can see here. And I also set up authentication. So I'll have my Galaxy username, Galaxy password, and you can also talk about this little Manfred, but we also had to kind of do a little bit of digging and manually set the SSL options, reject authorized to true, which was kind of part of the debugging that we did, and we didn't know that we had to set this manually, but yeah, after we set the SSL options, we passed those in as auth and SSL options, as well as the server name, the catalog. I didn't write the schema name down, but it still kind of worked for me. And just instantiating this constant Trino. And from there, I am able to utilize this execute query function, which awaits Trino.query and passes in basically any query that you want to kind of gather data from. And so I have my list of queries right here. And I
okay, let's talk about the connection first before we dive into the GUI seeker stuff.
Sorry, I'm getting very ahead of myself. Yeah.
No, that's cool. So what you're doing there is you are setting up an authentication with basic authentication. That's necessary because you log into Trino. Yes. Typically in Trino with LDAP or some sort of backend, but in Starburst Galaxy also with username and password. So that's how you supply that. What's happening in Trino is as soon as you have authentication, you must run under SSL, so transport layer security. So that's why the server URL that you have there is HTTPS, blah, 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 blah. So that's there. Catalog and schema, you are setting them. They're not required, but in Trino, but because your queries automatically can choose any catalog and any schema, but they set a default, and I think the client kind of made one of them required, right? Like when we were debugging. I think we had to set catalog, otherwise it wouldn't work or something like that.
Yes, I think catalog was the one that was breaking.
Yeah, so that's one of those things, like it's very typical when you connect to a database, that like a database server, that you have to say what database you're connecting to. That's kind of not the case in Trino, which is something that people often fall into, right? Like you can specify the catalog, but all it does is it sets up a default. You can still query anything else, right?
Yes, like, you just use different catalog once you're connected.
Yeah, you can just use whatever else, or even your query can just go access any anything else better, like catalog.schema.
Yeah, just fully table, qualify
sort of like your... fully qualify everything. So yeah, it's kind of like redundant, but it's one of those things that's like everyone is used to doing it. So
yeah,
it can be helpful to sort of like get started and be in the right place from the start, but then it doesn't actually limit you.
Sounds like a good pull request now that the Trino.js client is in the Trino repo. If anyone wants to go take that on, we can go fix that.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe fix that, the SSL options thing too, you know?
Yeah, the SSL is one of those weird things where like you have to pass in SSL equals true. It doesn't sort of automatically know.
Yeah.
And I think the only way we could figure out how to make that happen is just setting those options.
Yeah, okay.
We have to dig in a bit more why that's the case, but we didn't end up reading the JS client code just yet, but we will. But that's how you got connected. And then, so you have this Trino object basically ready to roll, and then you can just repeatedly fire different queries at it, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. So I have this function execute query, which takes in a query string, and that function is basically where we're using this Trino object. And we are kind of mapping through the data to clean it up, and it returns as an array of arrays, basically, for the data. So yeah, that'd be helpful when you're trying to transform that within your JavaScript application to know kind of the structure that is being returned, so you can configure as necessary.
And that's an async call there, and that's obviously very useful because like that can take a while, right? Like if you're like downloading a lot of data, your query is complex, then that can take a while, and you didn't have to really worry about that in the code. You just like call it async and call that method. You don't have to worry that in under the hood it's like potentially hundreds of calls to the REST API. You don't have to worry. So that's really nice to have that client then.
Yeah, of course. And then go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So now you have the data. So you run that execute query multiple times with different queries. Do you want to maybe tell us a bit more about those SQL queries that you wrote?
Yeah, of course. So I have six queries here that basically are returning some form of data that is being displayed on the front end that I showed you before. So this query is pretty simple, so I can kind of talk about it. So this is just returning the average pay of the rideshare driver per day based on all of the queries, all of the ride points that were detected in 2022. So I'm just pulling, like I'm rounding and averaging driver total pay as average driver pay, pulling in business, which is Lyft versus Uber, from this specific schema, this specific data set, and grouping by day of week and business. So it's relatively simple query. It only returns, I think, seven lines of data from Trino. So it was pretty easy.
But it needs to go through all the data, right?
So yes, it does.
and like this is a cool syntax. The select case when it basically creates these buckets and like automatically shuffles things into the right one. Yeah. That's a nice little syntax to use that Trino supports, which is cool.
Yeah. I will also mention that I was using a free cluster in Galaxy. So with the kind of 11 gigs of data that it was kind of parsing through, it was taking upwards of like 3 to 4 minutes. And that was with the free cluster. And so after upgrading that, the compute power in Galaxy, I was able to get the queries down to maybe less than like 30 seconds on my dashboard.
Yeah, that's a good. Point to mention, like queries do get parallelized and run faster in Trino if you have a cluster available, and the free cluster is actually not a cluster. It's just the one machine, so
yeah,
fair enough.
Hey, one machine's a cluster, Manfred.
Yeah, well,
you don't have to gatekeep what a cluster is.
Yeah, I know.
It's just a really
and one person is a crowd, right? That's cool. Got some other queries that we can see that are a bit more meaty. I mean, this is already pretty cool, but like
my weather normalization one, I think is the meatiest one. It was like almost 100 lines of
where you're calculating temperatures and precipitation into a
aggregated
weather unit.
Yeah, exactly. So like I kind of mentioned this a little bit before, I got a little excited, but I am using like some like min-max normalization to normalize all of this data, all of the weather parameters, averaging them, again here normalizing them to a value of 0 to 1, and then rounding them out. And so I get a weather index. And from that weather index, I get all the averages of the weather parameters for the SQL query to kind of figure out how many ride requests were on that day, or sorry, the number of ride requests with those given averaged weather parameters. Hopefully that makes sense. I think once you look at the query, it kind of makes a little bit more sense. I feel like I'm really bad at explaining it. But yeah, this one is a pretty meaty query itself.
I have a question about this query. This is a tricky one. So my understanding is that this gives us an idea, if we're a ride app company, like we would understand what is the weather that most of our rides are happening in.
Yes.
Does it normalize for the frequency of weather in New York so that you can then understand the effects of weather on ride frequency?
Yeah. Or for this query, it returns the number of days that weather index happens. So let's say like the weather index, like 0.5, like the average minimum temperature is like 70, the average maximum temperature is like 90. It'll return to you the number of days in 2022 that match those average weather parameters. And so you can kind of see the frequency of, yeah, so hopefully to answer your question, you can kind of get a better understanding of the frequency that it's happening, because this query returns to you the number of days that that weather composite occurs in 2020.
So you can both understand what weather most rides are going to be in, but also how often this weather happens, and then what the frequency of rides in a given weather is, rather than just the absolute value of rides. That's cool.
Yeah.
This is the world of data science. There's so many things to account for. So
yeah.
So how did you go about writing that SQL query? Because like when you were explaining it, it's one of those typical things. Like you think of it in a like at least that's how I roll. Typically, you're thinking in a kind of procedural way, but actually, when you have the SQL statement there, it's not procedural at all. It just like does it all at once, kind of thing. So how did you go about write, like this is like a multi, like over 100 lines of code. How did you go about writing that? You just start with like a smaller data set and like parts of it, and like how did you explore all that and got it working? Like it's nice to see it all working there, but like I'm sure you didn't just go type.
No, I wish. So I kind of broke this query down into kind of four major parts, as you can kind of see. So I'm kind of query, like they're like essentially four mini queries within this huge query. So kind of the first thing that I needed to do, I kind of thought to myself to follow the flow of doing a min-max normalization and then getting a composite index from that normalization. The first thing you kind of have to do is get those min-max values. So the first kind of subset query I did was, again, grabbing all the min-max values for each of the weather parameters. So a min-max value for the precipitation, a max value for the max precipitation like within the data. And so that's kind of the first block. The second block is first we need to kind of average all of the data average all of the parameters. So what is kind of the average minimum temperature? What is the average maximum temperature, the average precipitation in 2022, and the average snow of fall in 2022? Also, precipitation and snow is fall in inches. Just wanted to mention that as well. And so that was kind of the second kind of query. As you can see, we're kind of grabbing this data. You'll see from the different data tables, as you can see, when I find it, I can reference it again, but we're joining on different tables, we're grabbing the data from different tables. So there's just a lot of like data being kind of put together from different tables. So it was pretty confusing. But
yeah, and that data also comes from different catalogs you were mentioning before, right? So that's that's one of the powers of Trino, that doesn't really matter too much. You can still all whack it together in one SQL statement.
Yeah. And then from here, I had to normalize the data using kind of that min-max. So again, just getting the average minimum temperature, subtracting that from the min-max values that we found, and then we got this like normalization value. So again, a value from 0 to 1 based on the minimum and the maximum for that parameter. Yeah, this is getting pretty in the weeds. So
yeah, but that's interesting. Like that's what we want to learn about, Emily. So you are our pro now. You can teach us.
Yeah, and then finally, again, just grabbing that index from the normalization values that I found. So as you can see here, this is kind of where I'm getting that. Where I'm kind of calculating to grab that index. So adding all the normalization values together, dividing that by the number of parameters of 4, and then rounding that out to the hundreds. And yeah, that's kind of how I kind of thought through this query. Just again, just breaking it down into smaller parts, into smaller subqueries, and then essentially kind of putting that all together and following the flow.
And then, of course, remember the high level of, we run this query, we send it off to Trino, we get the results, and then we're rendering it immediately in React for a front-end web page. Like, this query is what is powering that website we looked at earlier. So, it is right there. It's very cool that it like filters all the way up just like that. So, I think it's really convenient if you want to make a website where you want Trino Analytics to power some charts that, like, with the JS client, you just embed your query and immediately you can go render your results with whatever component library you want. That's kind of unparalleled and makes this kind of thing super accessible in a unique way. So,
yeah, I think it's also very, very useful. Like, I mean, obviously you can make a dashboard like that with applications out of the box, but that's not what you typically need. Like, typically you need it on your custom dashboard or your custom website as a little widget here or like something over there. And this allows you to just like adjust to whatever web app you have. You can slot that in, right?
Yeah, I mean, the world of dashboarding is a complicated place. And I like the idea, the premises, you know, like front-end development is kind of ubiquitous, universal, and the ecosystem around this is massive.
Huge, yeah.
And probably better than like the ecosystems around like whatever dashboard tool you might want to use. So you could probably have more customization, more flexibility, more power, and find engineers who can actually understand how to implement it by taking a route like this. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. So you run these queries. So when, like, how does this actually work? Like your application, like your server starts up, it fires those queries automatically, immediately. It gets the data, puts it in those like local, like on the server. And then what happens? Like, it also fires up the UI, and then asynchronously the UI sort of like says, hey, is the data there? Can I render? Or like, I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I can kind of talk about like the whole flow and the architecture that I built, especially how the data is being fed into the front end. So I think the first thing that I would do is I would obviously start up this, start this on localhost, whatever Express fits out. And then I would also start my front end React project. So again, just using npm start. And then once the kind of React is rendered, or like once it initially mounts, I have this use effect called handle queries, which I've hard coded it for now. I've hard coded the query names, and I just have it in a kind of promise.all call where it will run through, it will use Axios to call this URL to my node server. And it, for this is kind of the call that is gathering all of that data. And so here I'm saving, for all the like React developers, I'm creating kind of a use state where I am setting the use state variable with the data that's being returned by this Axios call. And this all happens when it initially mounts because I have empty, I have an empty dependency array here for this use effect. And so this only happens one time. So this query call happens once, or these six query calls happen once. I store them within these use state variables. And then whenever something gets like re-rendered, like the dropdown gets reselected or with something like that, it just references that use state where all the data lives. And it just basically grabs the data that's necessary. It doesn't recall the query. And so, yeah.
But the data it saves is just the data that's the output of those queries. Yes. It's not the whole underlying data, yes. Right? So it's still a lot smaller than the like 11 gigabytes or whatever you had.
Yeah. So I specify that I want only the data like from that query call.
That's cool. You were chuckling before, Cole. Why was that? I think it was something about the promise, I'm guessing.
No, it's I just like the number of NEs on my screen. This is when we really get into TypeScript.
Yeah. It was getting pretty frustrated with like the types. And so I was just like, for now, I'm just going to put NE. And then I'll kind of specify that a little bit more once I'm ready to ship this to production.
For the record, Emily, about 2 days ago, had one query. So she was crunching to get all of this pulled onto the dashboard in time. So this is a reasonable hack to make sure we're ready to share. I have no criticism. It's just like the common trope is TypeScript. So it's
probably not like best practice, but so don't like replicate this to the team, but for the sake of getting something on the page, I was just like, okay, like let's just put any.
But honestly, I think this is still super educational, right? Like if you look at corporate, like internal web applications, I'm sure you'll find any all over the place as well. So
yeah.
I don't think you need to be ashamed or anything. Like this is super cool, like firing it up and pulling this off and like some really complex queries. And then, so what's happening on the UI? You were saying something about like material UI. So those charts... Yeah. Are they all like you just give them the data and then they know how to render and you just set colors or whatever and that's it? Or
that's actually to run. I'm using Recharts as well. I forgot to mention, which is another React library for graphs. I think it's built on top of D3, which is another chart library for React. But so I can kind of show you what's happening once we get the data into the front end and once it gets loaded. So again, we're storing them into use state variables. And from there, I'm going to get a little bit technical on the kind of React lingo and the jargon, but I'm passing in this data from the use state as a prop into the child components. So the child graph components. So the dashboard itself is the parent component. And as you can see, I'm rendering the child components within this dashboard itself. And I'm passing in the data for that lives in the use state variable as raw data to each individual graph. So I can give you an example of kind of the rendering that I had to do to clean up the data. And so this is kind of that bubble chart. So this is this chart right here. So the ride requests in New York, boroughs per hour. So this data gets loaded into gets passed down as props to this child component, and I have to do a lot of kind of transformation. And so I first have to transform this data into an array of objects rather than an array of arrays, and then I also have to kind of differentiate each object by the borough itself. So Manhattan has its own kind of array of data. Staten Island has its own array of data, so I have to do a lot of cleaning up within here. And this normalization, I'm just dividing each value by 1,000 because the numbers are going up to the hundreds of millions in terms of ride requests. So I was just like, I'm just going to cut that down to 1,000 by 1,000 as well. And so this is the actual component itself for the bubble chart. It's reading in this data, it's getting passed in this raw data. And these are the kind of the chart configurations itself. So I have to kind of put in chart data based on Manhattan chart data based on like the data that's getting outputted for Staten Island. So yeah, so all the data that's being passed in the child gets transformed and then gets kind of rendered into each mini chart component in the way that it needs to be read. So that's kind of what's happening under the hood here for the UI itself.
And so this like scatter chart component that you're finally invoking, that's from this library, yeah?
Yes, from recharts.
Okay.
So because you're doing all these definitions here and you're kind of like, I guess, hard coding some of the setup and stuff, that's what makes it possible to have the dropdowns then react as well.
Yes.
Correctly, right?
Exactly.
Because it doesn't go back to the server and run another SQL query. It doesn't even go to the raw data. It just like re-renders based on your definitions. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. So this is an example here. Area chart Uber Lyft, which is, I'll reference it. It's this one right here, this chart. So again, when we select like business, let's say Uber, we only want like the Uber data to be shown. And that logic lives here where in the parent component, it passes down the toggle option as a prop. So whenever someone selects like a different option in the select dropdown, it gets saved to a variable which gets passed down to the child. And then we just do some basic like conditional rendering like here where we're saying, okay, if the toggle option that's being passed down is all, or if it's Uber, render this chart or render this area portion of the chart. And again, for Lyft as well. So we're just doing some conditional operations to render on the data that already exists.
But you had to write all that, right? Like you had to trust it and custom make it, which is a lot of work, but it's also like, that's where the power lies, right? Like it's all up to you. Like you have all the power you want at your hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. And yeah, I can do one more final, show of the UI if you guys wanted to see. And here I just have the network option so I can kind of see like if the data is being loaded, how long it takes, the size, things like that. So
that's like the Chrome debugger tools, right?
Yes, Chrome debug tools. Awesome.
This is an awesome project, and it's a really good demo of showing what is possible if you wanted to take this approach to visualizing and showing off the analytics you're doing with Trino.
Yeah, we're very excited to see more JavaScript developers now hopefully adopt this and play around with using Trino to get the data into their applications and maybe even like send a pull request for the Trino.js client to improve that, whatever issues we'll run into, who knows, right? it does work, as you can see, very nicely. Also, like one thing that's also I thought is kind of funny when we were testing this, to verify that the Trino.js client works for what you want to do, we obviously couldn't just fire up some JDBC driver application and test that, right? Like we needed to try another application with the JS client. So do you want to tell us what we did there?
Yeah. Are you referencing the Trino driver and the SQL tools where we have to do kind of manual testing? Yeah. So in order to test to see if the Trino connection is even viable and if like my parameters are working, we actually came up with a smart workaround where we downloaded the SQL tools in VS Code and used the Trino driver. And we tested my parameters. So tested my server URL, tested my catalog, tested my user and password authentication parameters. And we were able to just test to see if this connection was viable. So we would like save connection and then we would test it. And then we were actually able to find like, oh, this connection is, it works, it exists. So how are we actually going to reflect this connection in JavaScript rather than using SQL tools? So I don't know if you want to add on more to that, man.
Yeah, I think the only thing is this works because Visual Studio Code is basically a JavaScript application and it uses the same Trino.js client as the library to connect. So we're basically verifying that whatever we got going there, we should be able to get going in code. And so we can verify that without writing the code, which is pretty cool. And it's also funny because obviously, like, well, maybe not so obvious, but a bunch of people use Visual Code as an editor for writing whatever. Maybe hopefully some Trino code or Trino documentation or whatever, but also all sorts of other things. And you can literally like use it as a a query tool. Just install that extension, get your connection going, and you can write SQL queries and run them into Trino as well. So it's kind of funny to see how that overlaps, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, I think that brings us right about to time. So once again, thank you very much, Emily, for showing this off. It's a really cool project. We're excited to, we can like publish this for the Trino community. I think there were plans to put it in a GitHub repository at some point so people could see your work.
The GitHub repository is already linked in the show notes, which are coming up later today.
There you go. Okay. So if you want to go take a look, fiddle with it yourself, or use this as a framework to go build your own Trino-powered web app, it will be there. The outline exists, and you can follow in Emily's footsteps. So,
yeah, thank you so much again for that demo and getting all that code going. And also thank you to Starburst for making it possible for you to run this easily and explore this project. It's been really great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. We've got just a couple things to wrap up on, I think, Manfred.
Yeah, nothing much. I mean, it's been a great episode. Like, I love how Emily is really ripped into and like gotten into the deep technical aspects of this. And I think it's something that's very valuable for everyone to play around with. As I mentioned, the Trino.js client from Felipe is now available in the TrinoDB org. So for people that want to explore that more, that is my fork.
There's the real one.
There's the real one. There's a bit of a readme here. As you can see, Emily was mentioning, you can just go npm install Trino client, and that's the kind of like what you do in your application then. And we are working to get this out as a release. Currently, it's still sort of like on the go. Super exciting. And then the source code repository from Emily is also linked here, so you can see that. Otherwise, we have a few things coming up later this year. What's happening, Cole?
We have brand for this, Manfred.
Okay, click the brand.
Had to be done.
You can point that out. It's all good.
We've got Trino Summit 2024 coming up in December. Call for speakers is open. If you have anything you want to share about Trino, related to Trino, tangentially adjacent to Trino, submit a talk. We'd love to have you. It's going to be a two-day virtual event, so we've got lots of room for talks and speakers. Make sure it's related to Trino. We sometimes get people who submit things that don't even mention Trino at any point in their abstract. Recommendation, don't do that. I need to see the word Trino somewhere. It's the Trino Summit, not this unrelated thing summit. We got a Trino Contributing Call coming up on the 22nd of August. What time of day is that, Manfred? Those things are always at strange times.
That's going to be, I think, probably 9 o'clock in the morning, but it's also overlapping with the Trino Community Broadcast 64 on the same day, and that has to be adjusted for the Stackable team who are in Germany. So I don't know yet.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So we know that they're on that day. We don't know exactly when on that day.
Yeah, and obviously Trino Community Broadcast 64 should be super interesting around the open policy agent access control and what's going on there. I know that it's getting some traction and allows some pretty interesting use cases across clusters and across query engines and stuff like that. Pretty cool. So that's exciting to come, but I'm obviously most excited about Trino Summit happening again. The one thing I want to mention about that is Trino Summit is going to be at least those 2 days. So we have plenty of room for cool talks. And we're also more than happy to have deeply technical talk like what Emily did or around Trino contributions or whatever, but also beginner talks where you just like, you know, talk about an introductory topic on the Trino side. So.
Yeah, we generally have a high-level goal of trying to make, like, 1 day beginner high-level day and 1 day, like, truly in the weeds. Yeah. So that gives us more freedom and room to kind of open things up to a really wide range of talks from the most basic to the most sophisticated, like, only engineers will understand this type talks. So if it's connected to Trino, submit it, share it. We'd love to hear your story.
Exactly.
And register to attend, even if you don't have anything to share. You can come watch. So,
yeah, I think that's it. Cool. Great episode. Thank you again for Emily. And thank you for jumping in with me today, Cole, again.
Always thank you to everyone for tuning in. Until next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for tuning in to the Trino Community Broadcast, brought to you by Starburst Data.